1.9, chapter 1, text 9. Okay, I figured out how I'll deal with all the commentators. First of all, I'll go through Prabhupada's explanation. I'll allot a certain amount of time for, first of all, analyzing Prabhupada's points. About 50% of the time I want to give to Prabhupada's commentary, and the remaining 50% I'll deal with the commentators one at a time. So I'll keep revisiting the sequence. If I find some new point or something which sheds more light, then I will read from a commentary. Otherwise, I won't. Like when I looked at Sridhar Swami's commentary, I didn't find any points which come out new, because his points are already already brought out by other commentators. So it's like that. Okay, 1.9. Anyecha bhava shura madarthe tyakta jivita nana shastra prahara sarve yuddha visharada. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons and all are experienced in military science. As far as the others are concerned, like Jayadratha, Kritavarma and Shalya, all are determined to lay down their lives for Duryodhana's sake. This was Duryodhana speaking. This is how he was thinking. In other words, it is already concluded that all of them would die in the battle of Kurukshetra for joining the party of the sinful Duryodhana. Duryodhana was, of course, confident of his victory on account of the above mentioned combined strength of his friends. Now, Duryodhana is actually speaking the truth. That they are determined to lay down their lives for his sake. And in fact, they actually laid down their lives for his sake. They actually died.
Aparyaptam tadasmakam balam bhishmavirakshitam paryaptam tidamedesham balam bhimavirakshitam.
Our strength is immeasurable and we are perfectly protected by grandfather Bhishma. Whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. Herein, an estimation of comparative strength is made by Duryodhana. Now he is comparing. He thinks that the strength of his armed forces is immeasurable, being specifically protected by the most experienced general grandfather Bhishma. On the other hand, the forces of the Pandavas are limited, being protected by a less experienced general Bhima, who is like a fig in the presence of Bhishma. This is how Duryodhana thinks. You could never. It is called Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Not seeing even while seeing. Even though he had seen that the Pandavas had done extraordinary activities, still, you know, he would, out of his envy, he would think, useless fellows. They can't do anything. You can easily defeat them. Duryodhana was always envious of Bhima because he knew perfectly well that if he should die at all, he would only be killed by Bhima. But at the same time, he was confident of his victory on account of the presence of Bhishma, who was a far superior general. His conclusion that he would come out of the battle victorious was well ascertained. Now Bhishma was well experienced. Bhishma was very much experienced. Bhishma was handling the throne of Hastinapur for a few generations. So Bhishma was very much experienced. So his From his perspective, from Duryodhana's perspective, if you don't consider the superhuman prowess of the Pandavas, if you only do a human analysis of the situation on both sides, then his conclusion is actually proper. That here is Bhishma, who is well experienced general. 11. Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yathabhagam avastha bhishmamevadhirakshantu bhavantas sarvayavahi. All of you must now give full support to grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. This is all very, if you read the Mahabharata, then you see that they have the, this is a very great science of how to fight in a war. You have certain areas, the army moves almost like a body. It's a certain way of fighting. There are certain areas where they allow you entrance, and there are certain other areas where they block entrance. So that's why he's referring to them. Strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. Now, after he glorified Bhishma, he wanted to make the point that, but everyone is important. He was frightened that, okay, now I've told so much about Bhishma. Now, what if the other people think? Oh, so Bhishma, okay, so Bhishma will handle it. Just like sometimes we get into this mode. Oh, he's so great, is it? Okay, let him be the temple person. Why I should be part of the management committee? He's so great, no? You like him so much, you glorify him so much. You should follow. Thank you very much. I'll resign. So like that. Duryodhana, after praising the prowess of Bhishma, further considered that others might think that they had been considered less important. So in his usual diplomatic way, he tried to adjust the situation in the above words. His idea, Prabhupada spells out what he was thinking. He emphasized that Bhishmadeva was undoubtedly the greatest hero, but he was an old man. So everyone must especially think of his protection from all sides. Yeah, Bhishma is so great, but you know, he's so old. We need everyone. We are one team. He's trying to build up what is called team esteem. One team. He might become engaged in the fight and the enemy might take advantage of his full engagement on one side. Therefore, it was important that other heroes not leave their strategic positions and allow the enemy to break the phalanx. Duryodhana clearly felt that the victory of the Kurus depended on the presence of Bhishmadeva. He was confident of the full support of Bhishmadeva and Dronacharya in the battle, because he well knew that they did not even speak a word when Arjun's wife Draupadi was in her helpless condition had appealed to them for justice, while she was being forced to appear naked in the presence of all the great generals in the assembly. Although he knew that the two generals had some sort of affection for the Pandavas, he hoped that these generals would now completely give it up, as they had done during the gambling performances. This purport is directly bodily taken from Baladeva Devi. He was very much dependent on Bhishma and Drona. Psychologically, very much dependent on them. He was very impressed with them and they did not prevent Draupadi from being dishonored. He was very happy with them. We thought these two people will always give us trouble. But we put them into a big question mark about dharma. Is it dharma or not? Is it dharmic or adharmic? And they started thinking so much about dharma, adharma, and they couldn't answer. So they were very happy with Bhishma and Drona. So he was dependent. And basically his idea is, now also I need Bhishma and Drona to not think too much. Not think so much. They should just support. They should fight. 12. तस्य संजनयन् हर्षं गुरुवृद्धः पितामहः सिंहनादं विनद्योच्चैः शङ्खं दद्मौ प्रतापवान्. देन् भीष्म, द ग्रेट् वेलियन्ट् ग्रैंडसायर् ऑफ द कुरु डायनेस्टी, द ग्रैंडफादर ऑफ द फाइटर्स, ब्लू हिज कॉन्शर वेरी लाउडली, मेकिंग अ साउंड लाइक द रोर ऑफ अ लायन, गिविंग दुर्योधन जॉय. The grandsire of the Kuru dynasty could understand the inner meaning of the heart of his grandson Duryodhana, and out of his natural compassion for him, he tried to cheer him by blowing his conch shell very loudly, befitting his position as a lion. So he could understand, Bhishma could understand what is in Duryodhana's mind. Could understand. So he blew his conch shell very loudly, like a lion he blew. Simhanadam Vinadhyaya. He vibrated a roaring sound like that of a lion. Indirectly, by the symbolism of the conch shell, he informed his depressed grandson Duryodhana that he had no chance of victory in the battle because the Supreme Lord Krishna was on the other side. But still, it was his duty to conduct the fight, and no pains would be spared in that connection. So he blew so loudly to say that, yes, It's my duty to fight, so I'll fight.
ततः शंखाश्च भैर्यश्च प्रवानक गोमुखा सह सैवाभिहन्यन्त सशब्दस्तुगलो भवत्.
After that, the conches, drums, bugles, trumpets and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. These are different types of drums. Bheri, large drum, panavanaka, referred to small drums, and kettle drums. So they blew all these, I mean they drummed, they blew conch shells, they blew horns all of a sudden.
14. Tatashvete haye yukte mahatisyandhane stitau madhava pandavashchaiva divyau shankhau pradadhmatukku.
On the other hand, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conches. Now there are few points to be noted.
Mahatisyandhane stitau.
They were standing in a great chariot. Okay.
Madhava
is the name of Krishna and it means the husband of the goddess of fortune.
Madhava.
Dhava means husband. Ma refers to the universal mother, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Madhava means Lakshmipati, the lord of the goddess of fortune.
Divya Shankhau, transcendental conscience.
Just keep in mind these three.
In contrast with the conch shell blown by Bhishma Dev, the conch shells in the hands of Krishna and Arjuna are described as transcendental.
The idea is, if you look at the description of Bhishma's conch shell, there's no description that that was celestial or divine or transcendental or anything like that. Whereas if you look at the description of Krishna and Arjuna's conch shell, they are described as being divine. So they are transcendental conch shells. And the sounding of the transcendental conch shells indicated that there was no hope of victory for the other side because Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas. These are signs of victory which Sanjaya could see. And therefore Sanjaya is talking to Dhritarashtra and he's noting they were standing on a great chariot. There's no description that Duryodhana or Bhishma, they were standing on some great chariot. On this side is Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune. On this side they were blowing transcendental conches, which create certain impact in whatever endeavor they are taking up. So these are all signs of victory. These are all various indications. These are good omens, or they are different signs of victory.
Jayastu Pandaputranam Yesham Pakshe Janardana.
Victory is always with persons like the sons of Pandu because Lord Krishna is associated with them. And whenever and wherever the Lord is present, the goddess of fortune is also there because the goddess of fortune never lives alone without her husband. Therefore, victory and fortune were awaiting Arjuna as indicated by the transcendental sound produced by the conch shell of Vishnu or Lord Krishna. We have Krishna's conch shell, the Arjuna's conch shell. These produce certain impacts.
Besides that, the chariot on which both the friends were seated had been donated by Agni, the fire god, to Arjuna. And this indicated that this chariot was capable of conquering all signs wherever it was drawn over the three worlds.
This chariot was a special chariot. It was a great chariot.
Mahatisyandhane stitau.
He was standing on a great chariot. This was not an ordinary human chariot. This was a chariot donated by the fire god to Arjuna when he was satisfied by Arjuna. And this chariot had special potencies.
For instance, we hear about many of these chariots and airships, like Shalva. He was given a special airship, and if you are on that, you would win over the whole city. And he went to Dwaraka and he harassed the residents of Dwaraka.
could disappear here, appear there. So they had different abilities. Similarly, this chariot had certain potencies. It was a special type of vehicle.
పాంచజన్యం హృషికేషు దేవదత్తం ధనంజయం పౌండ్రం దత్మో మహాశంఖం భీమకర్మా మృగోదరం. లార్డ్ కృష్ణ బ్లూస్ కాన్షియస్ కాల్డ్ పాంచజన్యం. అర్జున బ్లూ హిస్ ద దేవదత్త అండ్ భీమ ద వొరేషియస్ ఈటర్ అండ్ పర్ఫార్మర్ ఆఫ్ హెర్క్యూలియన్ టాస్క్స్ బ్లూ హిస్ టెరఫిక్ కాన్షియస్ కాల్డ్ పౌండ్ర. Note that there are different names given to different personalities here. Krishna is referred to as Hrishikesha. Hrishikesha means Krishna, the Lord who directs the senses of the devotees, the Lord of the senses. Hrishika means sense. Isha means the Lord, controller. Hrishikesha means the Lord of the senses. Here it means the Lord of the senses of his devotees. Notice that Arjuna is referred to as Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya means Arjuna, the winner of wealth. Dhanam Jayati iti Dhananjaya. He brought in a lot of wealth. Bhima is referred to as Bhimakarma, one who performs Herculean tasks, which means one who performs amazing, extraordinary, superhuman activities. Vrikodara, that's another name of Bhima. It means a voracious eater. Literally it means one who has a stomach like the stomach of a fox. One who eats a lot. Bhima used to eat a lot. Lord Krishna is referred to as Hrishikesha in this verse because he is the owner of all senses. The living entities are part and parcel of him, and therefore the senses of the living entities are also part and parcel of his senses. The idea is this, that the Lord, he owns the living entities. The living entities have their senses. They have their Swarupendriya. They have, first of all, their own spiritual body with the spiritual senses. He owns them. On top of it, we are given a subtle body with subtle senses. Subtle body, subtle senses, and a gross body with gross senses. We can refer to them as gross senses. He owns all of them, and he controls all of them. So not only the Lord has his own senses which he controls, he also has the senses of all the living entities, because the living entities belong to him and are controlled by him. Similarly, their senses are also controlled by him. Sanjay uses this expression in order to indicate that here is that person who is actually fighting this war. Krishna is fighting this war because he is controlling the senses of his devotees. On the Pandavas side, we are actually the Vaishnavas. Vishnu is controlling the Vaishnavas senses. So who is actually fighting this war in this pastime of the Lord? Krishna himself is fighting, but he is using somebody else. He is using, he wants to give credit to the Pandavas. In the pastimes of in Krishna Leela, you often see this, that Krishna, he prefers to glorify his devotees, pushes them up, and he takes a subsidiary role. Even in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you see that he gives credit to his devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he didn't write any books, for instance. But he ordered his disciples to write books. And in fact, we prefer to call ourselves Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. We don't even call ourselves Chaitanyanugas. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he loves Rupa Goswami so much, he's giving the credit. The whole sampradaya will be named after you. Just like Krishna gives the credit to Arjuna, and Yudhishthira, and the Pandavas. If you read Mahabharata, who wins? First of all, they'll tell you it's a war between Pandavas and Kauravas. They won't tell you it's a war between Krishna and the Kauravas. The reality is, it's a war between Krishna and those who are against Krishna. That is a real reality. But still, in his pastimes, he gives credit to his devotees. But Krishna, we should always remember that Krishna is the one using them. He's the one using them. The living entities are part and parcel of him, and therefore the senses of the living entities are also part and parcel of his senses. The impersonalists cannot account for the senses of the living entities, and therefore they are always anxious to describe all living entities as senseless or impersonal. This is the Mayavadi conception of the Jivatma. First of all, the Jivatma is illusory. But apart from that, it doesn't have a spiritual form and all that. They're impersonal. Now the impersonal, they can't deal with the senses, so therefore they describe the living entities as being impersonal. The Lord, situated in the hearts of all living entities, directs their senses. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hriddesher ganatishthati brahmayan sarvabhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. Chapter 18. The Supreme Lord, he directs the wanderings of the living entities. He directs their senses. But he directs in terms of the surrender of the living entity. Ye yatha maam prapadyante tamsthai vavajamyaham. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. And in the case of a pure devotee, he directly controls the senses. Here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord directly controls the transcendental senses of Arjuna, and thus his particular name of Rishikesha. So here Rishikesha means he who controls the senses of Arjuna completely. The Lord has different names according to his different activities. For example, his name is Madhusudana because he killed the demon of the name Madhu. His name is Govinda because he gives pleasure to the cows and to the senses. His name is Vasudeva because he appeared as the son of Vasudeva. His name is Devaki Nandana because he accepted Devaki as his mother. His name is Yashodanandan because he awarded his childhood pastimes to Yashoda at Vrindavan. His name is Partha Sarathi because he worked as charioteer of his friend Arjuna. Similarly, his name is Hrishikesh because he gave direction to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He was the controller of the senses of Arjuna. That's why he is referred to as Hrishikesh. And you see that Arjuna is referred to as Dhananjaya, and Prabhupada explains that. Arjuna is referred to as Dhananjaya in this verse. Dhananjaya means he who brings in money, brings in wealth. Because he helped his elder brother in fetching wealth when it was required by the king to make expenditures for different sacrifices. Sacrifices need a lot of money. And Arjuna was sent to bring money. He would not bring money in the sense of cash. He would bring gold, various valuable natural resources. Similarly, Bhima is known as Vrikodara, one of voracious appetite. Because he could eat as voraciously as he could perform Herculean tasks, Bhima Karma, such as killing the demon Hidimba. So he performed various amazing activities. So we clearly understand that there are different names which are used by Sanjaya. So Sanjaya is basically pointing out to Dhritarashtra, look on that side, yes, Hrishikesh, the one who controls all the things. Yes, Dhananjaya is brought in. Or to bring in money is not easy. You have to fight other armies, other countries, and then bring them. So that's the Arjuna. Look at on this side here, Vrikodara, Bhima. Basically he is saying they are all winners. But on your side, do you have winners or losers? Who do you have? So that was in there. So the particular types of conch shell blown by the different personalities on the side of the Pandavas, beginning with the Lords, were all very encouraging to the fighting soldiers. On the other side, there were no such credits, nor the presence of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Director, nor that of the Goddess of Fortune. But if you see the description of the other army prior to it, first of all, Krishna was not on that side. And when Krishna is not there, you don't have the Goddess of Fortune. And you don't have personalities who did extraordinary things like Arjuna, Bhima. You don't have such extraordinary personalities. So they were predestined to lose the battle. And that was the message announced by the sounds of the conch shells. They didn't have all this kind of transcendental consciousness. They did not have that kind of extraordinary superhuman chariots. So they didn't have all those. 16 to 18. Ananta Vijayam Raja Kunti Putro Yudhishthira Nakula Sahadevascha Sugosha Manipushpa Kau Kashyascha Parameshvasva Shikhandi Cha Maharatha Dhrishtadyumno Viratascha Satyakishcha Parajita Drupado Draupadeyascha Sarvashah Prithivi Pate Saubhadrascha Mahabahu Sankha Shankhan Dadmu Pritak Pritak. King Yudhishthir, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijaya, and Nakula and Sahadeva blew the Sukhosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi and the others of kings such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. So they're all very powerful fighters, and they were the ones who were blowing the conch shells. Whereas if you look at Sanjay's description of the Kauravas, he simply said in one shloka, he said, after that the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets and horns were all suddenly sounded and the combined sound was tumultuous. He didn't list any names because it is one group, they're all losers, you know, they're all going to lose, so what's the use of telling this great soul, this one like that. Sanjay informed King Yudhishthir very tactfully that his unwise policy of deceiving the sons of Pandu and endeavoring to enthrone his own sons on the seat of the kingdom was not very laudable, it was not very praiseworthy, it was not a great thing. The signs already clearly indicated that the whole Kuru dynasty would be killed in that great battle. From all this, you could see there was a transcendental conscience, there was Madhava, there was a great chariot, there was Rishikesha himself, Dhananjaya, there was Bhimakarma, Vrikodara. You had great fighters on this side. So the signs already clearly indicated that the whole Kuru dynasty would be killed in that great battle. Beginning with the grandsire Bhishma, down to the grandsons like Abhimanyu and others, including kings from many states of the world, all were present there and all were doomed. The whole catastrophe was due to King Dhritarashtra because he encouraged the policy followed by his sons. So this is what Sanjay is indicating to him. It's all because of you. You're the one who's causing this mess. Now if you look at Mahabharata, Dhritarashtra did not actively perform any of these simple activities. So why is not only Sanjaya as well as many great sages before the war, they all came and got on Dhritarashtra's case very much. They chastised Dhritarashtra very much. Why were they chastising him? He's not doing anything. He's a blind man sitting in one throne. But they're all criticizing him and they were trying to correct him. They held him responsible. Why were they holding him responsible?
Because he was the king.
He was the king. And apart from that, he was the father of Duryodhana and company. It is his duty to prevent. You cannot say, I didn't kill him. I only said, if you want to kill him, you kill him. The police will still come and arrest you. It's called abetting a murder. You have abetted the murder. So Dhritarashtra has abetted the whole catastrophe. He is the one who has abetted the destruction of his kingdom. He is held responsible. Not only he is held responsible, he is held to be the only cause of this destruction because of his non-action. He is held to be the only cause. In the Mahabharata, there are 18 cantos. I am referring to a parva as a canto. There are 18 parvas. There is one canto called Udyoga Parva, which means preparation. Udyoga means preparation. Preparation for a war. So, what was that? That was after the Pandavas' exile was completed. After their identities were recognized. Then, for one full year, there was a discussion amongst themselves, between the Kauravas themselves, between the Pandavas and their group. There was also a discussion between Yudhishthir and Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was saying that, oh, the citizens of Hastinapur, they're all innocent people. They need to be protected. Nobody should die. And Yudhishthir was saying that the citizens of Hastinapur, they need to be protected. No one should die. And then Dhritarashtra said, if there is a war, then so many people will die. This is not good. Please don't be responsible for this. And Yudhishthir was saying, if there is a war, so many people will die, so many women will become widows. Please don't be responsible for this. What was going on? Dhritarashtra's point was, all you people, just please, you know that Duryodhan cannot be changed. Actually, he said it. You know Duryodhan cannot be changed. So, for the sake of the population, so that they can be happy and peaceful, we should somehow or other stop a war. Somehow or other we should stop a war. So why don't you people just surrender to Duryodhan? Because we don't want people to suffer. Everyone should be happy. We don't want a war. You know, when there is a war, so much of problems will come up for so many generations. And Yudhishthir was saying the same thing back. He was saying that, yes, a war should be stopped. Under all circumstances, a war should be stopped. There should be no war. And therefore, Duryodhan should give us some portion of the kingdom so that we can rule. Now, if you read that section, and then eventually Krishna himself went as a peace messenger, Shanti Dut. And Krishna also asked on their behalf that, look, just give them 5 portions of the kingdom because they are Kshatriyas. Their Swadharma is to rule all levels of society. They're Kshatriyas. You give them that. And then Duryodhan made that famous irritating statement that I won't even give them enough land to put a pin. That much Sujistan. I won't even give that. So what is the point that came out as a result of that confrontation? The Pandavas, they are interested in following Swadharma. Swadharma has to be maintained under all circumstances. This side, they are not allowing them to follow their Swadharma. Now even then you can analyze further. Why didn't just Yudhishthir and company say, alright, what's the big deal here? So why, just for sake of 5 villages, why should I go for a massive war? The point is, Swadharma cannot be given up. Even if you are going to die, so many others are going to die, Swadharma cannot be given up. In ISKCON, our devotees don't have this way of thinking of the importance of spiritual or material Swadharma. They don't understand this point. Swadharma is more important than your life itself. And Yudhishthir, who is Dharmaraj, he understood this. He is Dharmaraj, he is the king of Dharma. He knows Vedic Dharma very well. And his idea was also supported by Krishna and the various sages. Various sages, they also said, yes, for the sake of upholding your Kshatriya Swadharma, yes, we must go on a war. And then they started gathering armies, on both sides. Duryodhana was always, of course, eager for a war. But now, who is held responsible? Actually, a war happened. And there's one canto called Striparva, which is simply a record of the lamentations of the wives of the warriors who died. And you see very, very clearly who is held responsible. Who is held responsible? Only Dhritarashtra is considered responsible. Only Dhritarashtra. You don't find Dhritarashtra and Yudhishthir responsible. No. Because Dhritarashtra is not doing his Swadharma. And Yudhishthir is doing his Swadharma. Even in the modern world, to some extent people understand, but to a large extent they don't. Let's say that's a husband-wife quarrel and there's a divorce. People don't actually understand that you have to think in terms of Swadharma. Is the man doing his Swadharma? Is the woman doing her Swadharma? Because definitely there is a big calamity on it. Children are all going to suffer, everybody is going to suffer. But if you adopt this Yudhishthira's way of thinking, you think in terms of Swadharma. Swadharma cannot be given up. Swadharma cannot be given up. It is not like like the modern idea is somehow or other just have the show going on. Somehow or other you don't think of Swadharma and all that, somehow or other everything should go on. Family should be there. But this is not the scriptural way of thinking. Scriptural way of thinking, Shastric, Dharmic way of thinking is Swadharma. Because when you die, you are going with your karma. All settlement. You came alone into this world and you go alone. It is built upon your devotional service to Krishna and what Swadharma have you upheld. That is what that's going to be calculated. Yes.
The question is about Mahabharata, which you mentioned. You know, in Gita, Bhagavad Gita, we have the word-to-word translation for each shloka. Is a similar translation available for complete Mahabharata?
With word-for-word meanings, I've not seen. But I've seen, there are a few translations of Mahabharata in Greenwich.
You mean for each word separately? Or
yeah.
Each word. But not word-to-word like Gita?
No. I've not seen that. Some non-devotees are translated.
Yeah. So all the 100,000 verses of Mahabharata, are they available?
Yeah.
All are. And translation for each word separately?
Yeah. Yeah. Valmiki Ramayana and Vyasa's Mahabharata have been translated. Quite a few editions. There are quite a few editions.
But Mool Ramayana is available for all the verses?
Which one? Valmiki Ramayana.
Mool Ramayana is there.
Ah, no, that is not available. That somebody has to do manuscript research to see if any portion of it is extant. Because most of India's literature are still in the form of manuscripts. Palm leaf manuscripts. Manuscripts. They are not yet printed.
So they are there.
We need to research and find out. A lot of these manuscripts have been destroyed by Muslim invasion.
Yes.
And also, like in Vrindavan, most of the Goswami writings and all have been simply thrown into the Yamuna by people who didn't know what these were, how important these were. Because for them, or some people use them for cooking. Some fuel for lighting fires, so they use. Then Nalan from the Kal. Sorry?
There were many various manuscripts of the same thing, or?
Like that, and there were different books, there were different editions of the same book. Lots of material. Lots of material. The University of Nalanda, it was there a few centuries back. And when the Muslims came, they destroyed the University of Nalanda. And it is reported that they were burning manuscripts for 6 months.
Was it in Pakistan? Nalanda, where is that?
In Central India.
In Central India? There was one in Takshashila. There was Takshashila, which also had a huge university and library. But they basically, these kind of things had happened. These are reality. So India has lost a very large amount of manuscripts. But still there are people who try to collect. There is a national mission to preserve manuscripts under the central government. They're struggling. So my point is there are a lot of books which need to be researched. And they are there in the manuscript forms. At least fragments are still there. So Moola Ramayana could be.
So the goal of this Bhagavad Vidyapitha
No. Yeah, but just the important books. The books which Prabhupada has outlined for translation. And to comment on them, to explain them.
So there is a pending job.
Oh, of course, the whole project exists for that.
Right.
The whole project exists for producing translators and annotators.
So which books are they?
Yeah,
written by Goswami?
Yeah, as a first priority, it is our Acharya's writings. Okay. So Sanjay's conclusion is all of this is due to you and only you. It is not you plus Yudhishthira. It's not a joint mess. It's not both of them together didn't get their act together. It's not like that. It's only Dhritarashtra. Because from the Vedic perspective, you have to examine every individual according to his Swadharma alone. It is not joined. Whether you consider father-son relationship, husband-wife relationship, or here you see uncle-nephew relationship, you have to examine, is the uncle doing his for dharma? Is the nephew doing his for dharma? Is the husband doing his for dharma? Is the wife doing hers for dharma? So if you, that is how you hold people responsible. 19. Saghosho dharparashvanam hridayanim yadarayat nabhasya prithivim chaiva tumulobhyanu nadayan. The glowing of these different consciences became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. When Bhishma and the others on the side of the Duryodhan blew their respective consciences, there was no heartbreaking on the part of the Pandavas. Such occurrences are not mentioned, but in this particular verse it is mentioned that the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra were shattered by the sound vibrated by the Pandavas' party. This was due to the Pandavas and their confidence in Lord Krishna. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity. You see, the Pandavas simply weren't bothered when they were blowing their conscience on the other side. There is no fear at all. Nothing is reported. They were simply fearless because Krishna is on our side. Like Prabhupada said, when a child is going in, Prabhupada in fact he explained that when he was a grihastha, he was once going in a bus and his son was holding on to him. And some in India, very often people joke with children. So somebody was joking with the child. He said, "You're not afraid?" He said, "No, why I should be afraid? My father is here. I have no fear." So Prabhupada, he said that, when children are holding on to their father and they're obedient to their father, the father protects them. Similarly, the Pandavas, they have Krishna with them. So they're not frightened. They're not bothered. And therefore, they didn't feel even the slightest fear when Bhishma and the others blew the conscience. But you see, the Dhritarashtras, the sons of Dhritarashtra, they were terrified. They were terrified. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtran kapidhvaja pravritte shastra sampate dhanurudyamya pandava rishikesham tadavakyam idamaham mahipate. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuma, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. The battle was just about to begin. It is understood from the above statement that the sons of Dhritarashtra were more or less disheartened by the unexpected arrangement of military force by the Pandavas, who were guided by the direct instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield. So they were depressed, the sons of Dhritarashtra. And here is another sign of victory. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjuna is another sign of victory, because Hanuman cooperated with Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravana, and Lord Ram emerged victorious. You see, Arjuna had a flag on which Hanuman was present in the form of a picture. Now Hanuman had told earlier that I will participate in this war by becoming an image on your flag, on Arjuna's flag. So Hanuman had given that word. And simply by being there, I'll create fear in your opponents. It's a sort of psychic fear-producing device. It's like even in World Chess Championships, there was this Garry Kasparov and big shots in their chess games. So one side was I think Garry Kasparov was Russian, wasn't he a Russian? And he was playing with another man. Now this opposite party, they had hired some Soviet psychics. Now I don't know if you have seen on television how these chess championships work. There are two people, they're sitting, there's a chess board, and the position of the chess pieces are relayed in the form of a huge screen. And there are so many people sitting, watching. So there are some Russian psychics who have been employed by Kasparov's opposition. I mean, not exactly that man, but people who like that like Kasparov's opponents. So they're hired. And these psychics, all they were doing was, they're giving psychic messages. They're saying, Kasparov, you're going to lose. You know it. You know that you're going to lose. See, you made that mistake. You have calculated another 15 moves in advance. But you know on the 16th move you're going to make a mistake. You know it. You see, he's already put the right piece in the right place. So you know it very well. Everyone knows it. The whole world is watching you. You're going to make a mistake. Don't blow it more. Just surrender. Resign. Resign. Psychic messaging. So this is when they keep doing it. And by doing it, you demoralize the person. And now the CIA had understood that the Soviets had a lot of... actually, both the CIA and the KGB, they are well known to have people who had ESP employed. Like for instance, the CIA people, they had... I've seen a book printed by the Americans with proper documentation on how the CIA had people who would simply sit and meditate, and they would be asked, where does the Russian army have its nuclear weapons? So then this man will go and sit and meditate, 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 meditate. Then he would take a piece of paper and he would start drawing. He would say, this is the latitude, longitude, and he would draw an entire scene. Okay. So then when they would counter check it with the spy satellite, they had a spy satellite, spy surveillance satellite system. So they would often spot it. So they would get to know. So the CIA had its people with ESP. The KGB also had its people with ESP. So it is well known that they had psychics on both sides who had this kind of abilities. So in this chess championship, you had some of these psychics. Basically, they just, it's a psychological pressure. The psychological pressure. You're a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser. So Hanuman was doing something like that. Simply there. And once in a while he would roar. He had the ability to manifest in that picture and simply come out of that and roar. Which is roar and get back. Which is roar and get back. So Hanuman was another, he participated like that. Now both Ram and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjuna to help him. Lord Krishna is Ram himself, and wherever Lord Ram is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore, Arjuna had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever. And above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus all good counsel was available to Arjuna on the matter of executing the battle. In such auspicious conditions, arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee, lay the signs of assured victory. So Arjuna's victory was assured. It was assured. It was known for sure. There's several reasons. One reason is because there were transcendental consciences. Another is Krishna was the husband of the goddess of fortune. He was the controller of the senses of the Pandavas. They had a great chariot. They had big personalities who had accomplished extraordinary activities fighting on their sides. And on top of it, they had like Hanuman's emblem, for instance. And already they could see that by the blowing of their conchals, the Dhritarashtra's sons, Dhritarashtra, they were depressed, whereas the Pandavas were not depressed. So there were various signs from which you could understand that the Pandavas were going to win. Now, one more point I wanted to bring out was, look at this system of war. This is important to note. In this system of war, you have people blowing conchals, and then they play drums, horns, Prabhupada says trumpets, and you find other people also doing like this. What is going on? Why do you need all these things? The idea is, this is analyzed actually by British ecologist who has done a lot of civilizational studies, called his name is Edward Goldsmith. He's a world-renowned ecologist. And he writes about, he points out that industrialization has led to the most violent civilization that we have ever seen in humanity. And he explains it different ways. And in one article, he analyzes war. So he points out in pre-industrialized societies, how they conducted war. And he points out that that war is categorically different from industrialized civilization's wars. Because those wars were wars of dominion. They are not wars of destruction. There's a difference between these two. He points out that when animals engage in fighting amongst themselves, they engage in a lot of pre-war rituals. They engage in many activities, like for instance when he points out when a lion comes to, lion goes and challenges another animal, he will do different things. He will move his head in a certain way, he will move his legs and this, and he will circle around, he will do different things. The basic idea is, here I am, I've come. I have no fear, and I'm calling you, I'm challenging you, let's fight, we will see who wins. It's a war where the stated intention is to dominate. And he also points out in different tribes, some of the so-called aborigines of Australia, for instance, they also, before they get into a war, you know, they have their own fights between themselves. So they also have their pre-war ritual. They come and say things, they blow on trumpet, they do different things, and talk, they'll come up with, basically their thing is, come, here we are, let's fight. So it is a war of dominion. And in fact, when they win over, let us say they actually fight and win over, they win over and they rule the people who are won over. They're not interested in killing them. They're not interested in destroying them. They're only interested in dominating over them. So this is a war of domination. It's a war of dominion. This is not a war of destruction. Here the goal is not to kill people. It is not a war of cruelty. Or like once Jayadrata Maharaj spoke about the Arabian camel wars. You know, there's different Arab tribes. They used to have wars about camels. You know, so one tribe will fight against another tribe. So they also had that. They would have their rituals and this and that. And once one tribe, one group wins over the other, he takes away the camel. And then after some time, they will declare war on this one and they'll take away the camel. It's all about camel. Camel is like a wealth, a symbol of wealth. But then when the Turks came, if I remember correctly, it was the Turks. When the Turks started to wage wars, so they did the same thing. They also did all the war, pre-war rituals, this, that. But then when the Turks, when a Turk tribe won over one of these Arabian tribes, and the Turks, what they did was, they not only stole their camels, they stole their camels, killed the men, raped the women, burnt the houses, and killed the children. So then these people are completely aghast. They say, what is this? You know, what is this? What are you people trying to do? And so therefore they did the same thing back. They gathered their forces and after some time they went to some Turk tribe. They did the same thing. They killed the men, they burned the houses, raped the women, killed the children. They did for that. But this is a war of destruction. The previous camel fights, they are a war of dominion. So you look at this amongst the Aryans, this war system, it is basically to create fear and terror. So that's what they do all this. We have come. Look, one last chance we are giving you. Surrender now. Otherwise, we'll dominate over you. That's all. We'll dominate over you. But if you look at the industrialized civilization and there was, Edward Goldsmith points out that this is the most perverted form of warfare that has ever happened. They first of all, they arm you with weapons where you can shoot and kill people without even knowing who they are. Some American warship goes, air fighter, puts a bomb in an in the Middle East, in a shopping mall, and killed thousands of children, women. It has nothing to do with the war. These people have nothing to do with the war. So these are wars of cruelty, violence. Whereas they are not dharma yuddhas, they are all adharma yuddhas. I was watching one of those. There are so many documentaries they have done on the recent American invasion of Iraq. And they point out, they show in one camera, a man has a gun, he's just looking at a car and he's shooting that car. He doesn't even know who the hell is inside that. He's just shooting that. And he keeps saying, I've seen one target. The target is moving to the right. And the target is about to come out of the car. And before that target comes out of the car, the target needs to be shot. So the first thing that you do is, you take all these human beings and make them into objects. You make them into targets. Whereas, you see, here it's not like that. Here it is not like that. This is a dharma yuddha. This is not an industrialized, adharmic, tamasic war. This is based on the mode of passion. It's not made based on the mode of ignorance. The mode of passion is based on some rules. Of course, it was degenerating day by day in the Kurukshetra war also. But at least they have certain principles, some idea. They have some idea they have. Like Prabhupada writes in Krishna Bhava, when Kala Yavana, who's probably some Greek fellow, when he came to fight with Krishna, Krishna, he didn't want to kill this Kala Yavana because he'll become contaminated if he kills a non-Vedic person. He's non-Vedic. So all these non-Vedic people, you shouldn't even kill them. Because if you kill them, you touch them, you become contaminated. So he didn't want to kill Kala Yavana. Everybody is Kala, he's a Yavana. So the Acharya, they said he was a Yavana, a non-Vedic fellow. So Krishna didn't want to even look at him. Without looking at him, Krishna started walking in one direction. And Kala Yavana, even though he was a Yavana, he also gave up his weapon. Because Krishna gave up his weapon, he started running. So he thought, at least I should fight equal with equal. So he is giving up weapons, I will also give up weapons. So even though he was a Yavana, he followed that. So again, you see, their fighting is something like a sport. It's like a sport. And in fact, you will see that the commentators refer to it like that. Something like a sport. The goal is not to somehow or other kill you. That's not the goal. The goal is to kill you using the rules and regulations of warfare. If I can, while following the rules and regulations, I can kill you, okay, fine. If I cannot, then no. So those wars were rajasic. They're not tamasic, they're Vedic. So that is one point that we should know. Okay, coming to Baladev Vidyabhushan, let me point out some. Okay, now regarding this verse, text 10, Duryodhana is saying that our war protected by Bhishma is sufficient. Whereas Bhima's, the war protected by Bhima, that is not, here Prabhupada translates it like this. Our strength is immeasurable. We are perfectly protected by grandfather Bhishma. Whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. Srila Baladeva says, Nanvaivam Uhayo Sainyayo Taulya Tavaiva Vijaya Khatamitya Ashankya Swa Sainyasya Adhikyamaha. That Duryodhana wanted to point out that it is not that both the armies are equal. My army is more powerful. And he spoke this text. Aparyaptam means aparimitam. Asmakam balam. Our strength is unlimited. Tatrapi Bhishmena Mahabuddhi Mata Achirathena Abhirakshitam. And on top of it, it's protected by Bhishma, who is a very intelligent person and who can fight with unlimited number of soldiers. He's an Atiratha. Etesham Pandavanam Balam Tu Paryaptam Parinitam. But these Pandavas, their military force, that is limited. Tatrasi, on top of that, Bhimena, Tuchya Buddhina, Artharathena, Abhirakshitam. And on top of it is protected by Bhima, who has hardly any intelligence. And he is an Artharatha. He can't even fight one man. Ataha Siddha Vijayoham. Therefore, I am very sure that I am going to win. This is Duryodhana's way of thinking. Ataivam madukti bhavam vigyaya acharyas ched udasita tadamat karya kshatihi iti vibhavya tasmin swa karya bharam arpayanaha ayaneshiti. But then he thought, if he understands what I am trying to say, then Dronacharya will become very indifferent and he will just become lax in his duties. If he becomes lax, then whatever I want to accomplish will be destroyed. And therefore, he entrusted him with full responsibility. He wanted to empower Duryodhana. And therefore he said, yes, but even though Bhishma is so great, nevertheless, you know, when he is fighting, like he sang, Yudha Vinivesha Parshvata Prashitascha Apashyantam Tam Yathanyaha Na Vihanya Tatha Kuru Kuruvi Kurvantu Ityarthaha. He may be fighting, but he may be completely absorbed in fighting with one warrior. So on the side, some others may come and attack him. On the back, somebody may attack. So, and then he may be destroyed. So therefore I need all of you. Because all of you should protect Bhishma. Senapato Bhishme Nirvadhe Madvijaya Siddhir Shivhavaha. That as long as Bhishma is okay, without any obstacles, then definitely that my victory will come out for certain. I am Ashayaha. This is what is in Duryodhana's mind. Bhishma Asmakam Pitamaha. Bhishma is our grandfather. Bhavamstu Guruhu. And you are our Guru. Tau Yuvam Asmat Ekanti Hitaishinam Viditav. It is well known that both of you are our well-wishers. Ya vaksha sadasi mad anyayam vidantavapi draupadya nyayam krishtav na avochatam. And you too, on that day where we played with dice in that assembly, you knew that I was engaged in anyaya, religious activities. And when Draupadi was asking both of you about what is righteous, and both of you were quiet, mayatu pandaveshu pratitam snehabhasam tyajayitum tathanivedam. So therefore, and you never spoke, so that was a very good thing. So like that, now you have a little bit of affection for the Pandavas. So in order to cause them to be, that to be rejected, therefore I am submitting this to you. This is what is in Duryodhana's mind while he is speaking that. Regarding text 12, Bharadeva Vidyabhushan gives an insight into why, like you see, this sentence by Prabhupada, he clarifies the meaning of this. This is text 12 and Prabhupada's purport. Indirectly by the symbolism of the conch shell, he, Bhishma, informed his depressed grandson Duryodhana that he had no chance of victory in the battle because the Supreme Lord Krishna was on the other side. So now, Bharadeva Vidyabhushan is saying that, Duryodhana spoke to Drona and then Bhishma, he blows the conch shell. So, Acharya Baladeva says, Mukhataha kinchit anuktva shankanadam atra karanena jaya parajaya khadu ishwaradino tvadarthe kshatradharmena deham tyakshyami iti yajyate. Bhishma, he did not speak anything to Duryodhana. Duryodhana is speaking to Drona. In the presence of Bhishma and company, they are also hearing what Duryodhana is speaking. Doesn't speak anything to, doesn't tell him anything. Even though he's glorifying Bhishma, still Bhishma is not speaking anything. He takes up his conch shell and he blows it. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan is saying, by not speaking to Duryodhana anything, simply he's taking the conch shell and blowing. From that, he is giving an indication that, look, whether we win or lose, that is under the control of the Supreme Lord. But I am going to engage in my Kshatriya duty and I am going to give up my body for your sake. So that's what he is expressing to Duryodhana. The other point Prabhupada has already covered so far. Regarding text 15 onwards, Krishna is referred to as Hrishikesh. And he writes, Atra Hrishikesh Shabdena Parameshwara Sahayitvam. It indicates that Arjuna was personally assisted by the Supreme Lord. And Arjuna is called Dhananjaya because Yudhishthira Adina Rajasuya Yajitva. He had gone in all directions and brought in unlimited wealth for the king, for Yudhishthira. He also points out that Yudhishthira is referred to as Raja. Look at this. I don't know if you noticed it. Ananta Vijayam Raja Kunti Putro Yudhishthira, text 16. King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell to Ananta Vijayam. So he is referred to as the king. And on top of it, Bhima is referred to as Bhimakarma, the one who performs Herculean tasks. Arjuna is referred to as the winner of wealth, Dhananjay. So Acharya Baladev comments, Raja, Bhimakarma, Dhananjaya, ityebhihi Yudhishthiradinam Rajasuya Yajitva Hidambadi Nihantritva Dig Vijaya Hrita Ananta Dhanatvani Cha Vyajya Pandava Senasu Utkarshaha Suchyate. The force of the Pandavas was very much exalted, and that is pointed out by using these three names. Raja means he who performed the Rajasuya Yajna. Bhima Karma, one who performs Herculean tasks, means he had killed demons like Hidimba. And Dhananjaya means that Arjuna had brought unlimited wealth for the sake of Yudhishthira. And he had conquered various directions. Parasenasu tat abhavat apakarshascha. And we understand that the opposing army, it was not, there's no indications like this. You don't have somebody who did some extraordinary activities, and Sanjay is not expressing it here also. So we understand that they are low class. Prithvipate. See, he's saying Prithvipate. This is where Prabhupada is deriving his whole commentary from. Text 18. Drupado Draupadeyasya Sarvashah Prithivi Pate. In the translation, O King, all these people blew their conscience. O King, Prithivi Pate. Sanjay is referring to Dhritarashtra as O King of this planet, O King of Earth, King of the civilized people on Earth. Prithivi Pate iti. Hey Dhritarashtra iti tava Durmantranodayaha Kulakshaya Lakshanonarthaha Samagata iti Suchyate. All of this is because of you. It's because of the bad counsel that is coming from you and that has led to this disaster, anartha. What type of anartha? Kulakshaya Lakshana. This entire dynasty is being destroyed. It has come because of you. Because of your bad counsel. Because he always encouraged his son. Dhritarashtra's weakness was, he thought his children were great, you know. It's completely crazy. He lost his ability to think objectively in the name of affection. So that was his problem. Then practically we are done with the Acharya Balaji. Again Krishna is referred to as Rishikesha in text 20. Rishikesham tadavakyam idamaha manipate. Arjuna spoke to Rishikesh. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan has commented, Sarveshwaro Harir Yesham Yojya Tesham Tadekanta Bhaktanam Pandavanam Vijaye Sandeha Gandhopi Neti Bhavaha. That there's not even a trace of doubt that the Pandavas are going to win because they are spotless devotees of the Supreme Lord who was engaged on their side. Krishna Chakravarti has made one important point which I want to bring up. All the other points have already been covered by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. This is much earlier. This is in fact text number 9. On text number 9, this is a statement by Duryodhana. Anyecha bhagavat shuram atarthe chakta jivita nana shatra praharana sarve yuddha visharada. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons and all are experienced in military science. The point Vishnu Chakravarti focuses on is the statement. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. And he comments, Chakka jivita iti jivita tyagena api yadi mat upakarasya tada tamapi kartum pravrittaha iti artaha. That I have people on my side who are willing to do good to me, even if it means to give up their life. Vastutastu, however, in reality, mayaivaite nihata purvameva nimitta matram bhava savyasachin iti bhagavadukte Duryodhana Saraswati Satyameva Hasma. These words that have emanated from Duryodhana were actually true, because we understand that Krishna had already decided by that time. Krishna will speak in the 11th chapter that I have already killed all these people. Now you become an instrument and you fight. So Krishna had already decided, he has already made a sankalpa that these people would be destroyed and their lives will be taken away. So that point is made by Vishnu Chakravarti. Otherwise, Vishnu Chakravarti's other points are the same. Ramanujacharya has made one point which I wanted to bring up. Nice point. He is also talking on that. On that same show. No, I am taking a point from him right at the end. Text 19. Ravan just simply summarized texts 1 to 19 in one comment. And then, right at the end, he makes one interesting point. Adhyeva nashtam kurunam balam iti dhatarashtra nainire. That the sons of Dhritarashtra, they thought at that moment that indeed today the Kuru's force is destroyed. They could understand that, because when the Pandavas blew their conch shells and all that very moment the sons of Dhritarashtra, the 100 sons, they understood this. Yes, it's gone. Finished. Evam tat vijayahi kankshine Dhritarashtraya sanjaya akhataya. And even though Dhritarashtra was hankering for their victory, Sanjaya wanted to tell him this truth. Keshav Kashmiri goes into great detail. I've never seen a commentator who analyzes in such detail. He analyzes words within a verse and says, why is he speaking the second half of the verse like this? He analyzes very greatly. So I'll read a few points that he makes. this is very nice. Regarding Bhishma. Tasya Sanjanayan Harsham Guru Vridha Pitamaha Simhanadam Minadhyotri Shankam Dadmam Pratapavan. Text 12. Evam Shatru Sainyad Antarvitopi Shatatvena Eva Acharyam Upasrutya Sva Utkarshya Dhyotaka Vachanaihi Atushtena Acharyena Upekshitam Rajanam Yatva Ayaneshu Ityadina Atmashritam Yatva Rajatvan Na Upakshaniya Iti Tam Bhishmo Harshayamasa. See how much they have analyzed. Duryodhana speaks all these things to Drona. Drona doesn't respond to him. Keshav Goswami explains that in reality Duryodhana is frightened on seeing the opposing force. But still he is trying to deceive his Acharya. He is speaking different things. And he points out how great his army is. And by this, he dissatisfied his Acharya. And therefore the Acharya, he neglected him. Didn't speak anything to him, okay, whatever you think. But Bhishma, he thought, no, but he's a king still. Whatever it may be, he's a king. Duryodhana is a king. And on top of it, Duryodhana is telling all these people to protect me. And because he is a king, I should not neglect him like Drona. I should make him happy. With that in mind, he took a conch shell and he blew, just to make him happy. Panchajanya Devadatta Adi Namabhis Tesham Shankha Vyita Tavaputra Sainyetu Kasyapi Namna Prasiddha Shankha Nasti. Sanjay wanted to point out that everyone knows that Panchajanya Devadatta, these conscious are, they know about these conscious. It's a well known. But on your son's army, nobody has even one conscious which is famous. Kincha Rishikanam Indriyanam Ishaha Rishikeshaha Yesham Sahaya Tesham Eva Jayaha Bhavishyati Iti Avipraya. And on top of that, you should keep in mind that the Lord of all the senses, the Supreme Lord, He has chosen to support them. So definitely they are the ones who are going to win. When it says that the sound was tumultuous, tumulaha, atitivra, tumultuous means it was excessively fierce. When the Pandava force, when they blew their conches, it was very fierce. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. It was tumultuous. Tumultuous means that it was actually very fierce. And the sounds, it echoed through the skies. And it made the sky and the clouds tremble. It was very fierce. It was. Yatha tvadiyanam bhayam praptam pandavanam na tatha bhayam jatam pratyuta shurutva vridhim. Just see, your sons, they became frightened. But the Pandavas, they were not frightened. And on the other hand, not only they were not frightened, they became even more heroic. Tumula Ghoshanantaram Kapidhvajo Garjanena Vairi Dhairya Apaharakaha Kapihi Hanuman Dhvaje Yasya Saha Arjunaha. But why is Arjuna referred to as Kapidhvaja? Kapidhvaja means he who has a monkey on his is flying, because Hanuman, he was present on the flag, and by his roaring, he would sometimes roar. I told you, he would come out and roar, and by roaring, he would destroy the the steadiness of the enemies. And he had promised this. He had actually promised this earlier on. Arjuna, Dhartarashtran, Vyavastitan, Drishtva, Shastra Sampate, Pravritte, Pravartamane, Sati, Digvijayana, Pandok Putra, Gandivam, Agnitattam, Dhanur, Udgyamya. Every word he has analyzed. This verse 20, it refers to Arjuna as Pandava. Pandava means son of Pandu. Now Pandu was actually a very powerful warrior. He was a Digvijayi. Digvijayi refers to kings of a certain type who would go and who would announce that if anybody wants to oppose me, you oppose me. Otherwise, you give me a letter that you are under me and you pay me taxes. Again, this is something that Prabhupada spoke of in one lecture. Prabhupada was speaking about Ramachandra. Ramachandra, after he fought with Ravana and destroyed Ravana's dominion, Ramachandra didn't actually take over Lanka. He just appointed Vibhishana. And he said, you just give some tax, some produce, which is an annual sign that we are under you. You are a subordinate country. So Prabhupada explained that in the Vedic system, when kings would go, it's not that they would take over. They would let people be. You be wherever you are. You know, local people should manage local people. You don't need to have somebody from some other country go there and. But you should understand your position. You are under us. So there are some kings who would go around like this. They are Digvijayis. Pandu was like that. And he is referring to Arjuna as a Pandava, the son of the Digvijayi Pandu. He took his bow. Now what type of bow? The Gandiva bow. And he was standing on what kind of chariot? The chariot given by Agni. Rishikesham tadavakyam idamaham manipate. Tada Rishikesham sarvendri niyantaram swasarathibhutam bhagavantam idam vakshivanam vakyamaha. When he told the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had become his charioteer, even though he was the controller of the senses, he spoke the following words. And here, Sanjay is referring to our Dhritarashtra as Mahipate, O King of the Earth. See, Idamaha Mahipate, text 20, the last, Mahipate, O King. And Keshav Kashmiri points out that this Mahipate is somewhat sarcastic. Mahipate iti sambodhanena evam bhute arjune yuddhaya upasthite niti abhavat nashyamanam tava mahipatitvam iti upahaso dhvanitah. He is suggesting that your being the king is being destroyed because of lack of dharma while Arjuna was preparing for the war. So when he is referring to him as Mahipate, he's speaking somewhat laughingly, somewhat sarcastic. Okay, I'll stop with that. We'll continue tomorrow. Okay, we'll continue. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama.